This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
We would like to welcome you to our event, Animal Junction, featuring Jungle Joe and the marvelous animals that he has brought with him. My name is Davin Jagannath.
And I'm Becca Starr.
And we are undergraduate students from the University of Pennsylvania as part of the RBSL Russell Bergman Curatorial Seminar at the Slot Foundation. The class has organized this event along with our professor, Aaron Levy, executive director and a senior curator at Slot.
We're very lucky to have Jungle Joe here to present with us tonight. A former police officer, he traded in his badge to pursue his dream of being an exotic wildlife breeder, keeper, and educator. He works to provide a mixture of education and entertainment, which he has now dubbed edutainment. His mission to educate through entertainment about exotic wildlife, including the need to protect and preserve these animals. With over 100 critters to choose from, Jungle Joe is here tonight with three very interesting animals. A kinkajou, or honey bear, a Eurasian eagle owl, and the stars of the evening, a mother and baby sloth.
This event is in conjunction with the symposium In Defense of Sloth, an eclectic and entertaining series of presentations about that most philosophical of vices. It is organized collaboratively between Sloth Foundation and Cabinet Magazine to take place December 7th and 8th in New York at the Cooper Union and Zone's Chelsea Center for the Arts. The symposium will discuss the metaphor of sloth in our society, in particular the tropes of laziness, idleness, and productivity in contemporary art. This event seemed to greatly complement this conference in a way that people of all ages could enjoy. The animals shown today all have ways of life that differ greatly from our own, and we hope that by learning about their behaviors, you will be able to understand more about the types of lifestyles that we value in our society.
So thank you again for coming tonight.
And we hope you enjoy the presentation.
Test 1, 2, 3. Well, good evening, everybody. How y'all doing this evening? Good? Excited to see some neat exotic animals? All right. Well, let me introduce myself. I'm Jungle Joe, pet detective, a retired police officer. I spent 17 years of my life in law enforcement. I began my career right here in the city of brotherly love back in 1989. In the 1990s, I moved to Broward County, Florida. I was a policeman in Fort Lauderdale for many years. The reason I moved to Florida is because of the warm climate. That warm tropical climate allowed me to keep my exotic friends outdoors. So I had a very big, successful exotic animal business in Florida for many, many years. I had many different types of permits to be able to own those animals in Florida. In the late 1990s, I moved back here to Pennsylvania because, believe it or not, I was homesick. I missed my hometown. I missed my family. So I ended up moving into Bucks County. 2 years ago, I retired from Falls Township Police Department, a department in Bucks County. During my career, I was a member of two different SWAT teams, one in Florida, one up here. I was on CSI, Beach Patrol, and Bike Patrol. Sadly, I got injured in line of duty. I was forced to retire. I didn't want to retire because I got to tell you, being a policeman is a ticket to the greatest show on earth. There's a lot of weirdos out there. A lot of fun in police work, though. Well, I am having fun in my new career as a pet detective. It took me 6 months to go through the permit process here in Pennsylvania, much more difficult than it was in Florida. The state government up here doesn't fool around. They do not want individuals owning exotic animals. They're very, very strict. There's a lot of laws governing the ownership. I was able to prove to them that I had 20 years of experience working with exotic animals because of my business in Florida, and I began my animal career actually here in Philadelphia working at the Academy of Natural Sciences as a volunteer and also at a large pet store chain in Northeast Philadelphia. Because of my 20-plus years combined of exotic animal experience, they said, okay, Joe, we're going to grant you these permits to own these animals for educational purposes only. And I tell you guys and girls that because I know some of you are going to go home and say, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, I want to buy one of those cool animals I saw here this evening. Most of these animals that I own cannot legally be owned in the state of Pennsylvania. And I can tell you from experience, we get calls from Fish and Game from time to time saying, hey, Jungle Joe, we just confiscated an exotic animal such as a monkey. Last year, they called us a $6,000 monkey. Now, most people thought, hey, I would have jumped on that opportunity. We did not jump on that opportunity because we knew nothing about that animal. We don't take animals from the wild. We certainly don't want an animal if we don't know its history. We don't want a wild-caught animal because wild-caught animals can carry diseases. diseases that can be contagious to people and to other animals. Even though all of our little friends here are captive bred and born, they're still quarantined. They're still placed in a facility by themselves for 30 to 60 days to make sure they don't have any diseases. It's very, very important that we do that. So I was able to get my permits from the township where I keep my animals. I was able to get the special permits for the Pennsylvania Game Commission. Then I had to go to the federal government and get permits from the United States Department of Agriculture to be able to bring the animals into the public for educational purposes. So here we are a year and a half later. I'm proud to tell you, we just were the recipient of the 2007-2008 People's Choice Award for the Best Children Entertainment in Philadelphia Daily News. So thank you guys very much. Thank you. And we just formed a partnership with Jack Hanna, who I'm sure most of you see on TV. He has a show, Animal Adventures and Into the Wild. He's very frequently on the Good Morning America show and David Letterman show. So we're working with Jack and their zoo, the Columbus Zoo, and we're traveling around the country now supplying our animals for his shows. So we're having a lot of fun. So before we get started, I just want to go over some safety rules. It's important that we don't make loud noises or sudden movements. It will scare some of the animals that we're going to have come out here in a few minutes. One animal in particular, our honey bear, the kinkajou, is extremely shy. She does not like noise, not even a little bit, and she doesn't like light, not even a little bit. This little girl stays in her sleeping pouch all day long. A lot of my animals are nocturnal, so they spend most of their day sleeping or hiding, and they come out at nighttime. So we want to make them as comfortable as possible. The more comfortable they are, the longer that we can keep them out of their carriers and we can talk about them. Please do not come beyond these barriers and try to pet the animals. It's against the law. State law prohibits public contact with exotic animals. These are not pet shop animals. They're not farm animals. They're wild animals, which means they're not domesticated like dogs and cats. I raise all these little animals up from little babies, but you know what? Sometimes I get bit. Sometimes I get scratched. It comes with the territory. It's part of the job. I've learned to live with that. And if I get bit or scratched, it's always my fault. More times than not, it's my fault. That's how these animals defend themselves. When they get scared, they bite or they scratch. So we don't want any accidents to happen. Lastly, please do not talk during the program, because if a large group of individuals are talking, then other people can't hear me speak, and that's really not fair to the other people that are here. So we're going to get started right now with my friend Oliver. And Oliver is a European eagle owl. He is the largest species of owl in the world. He's shy. Showtime. Come on out here. There we go. There's Ollie. All right. There's approximately 140 different species of owls throughout the world. Owls are on just about every single continent except for Antarctica. Owls range in size. The smallest owl in the world is the elf owl, which are about 5 inches. This guy here is the largest owl in the world. The males can weigh about 5 pounds with a wingspan of 5 feet long. The females get even bigger. And with your species of owls, the females in general tend to be much larger. The females can weigh in at 10 pounds with a wingspan of 6 feet. And let me tell you, my friends, you are looking at a very, very powerful predator. My friend Oliver here is a carnivore. He's a meat eater. So he's out there looking for live food. Notice the size of his eyes. If our eyes were proportionate in size to his, they would be the size of grapefruits. So we could see pretty far away. And that's how my friend here locates his food. He can see his prey from over a mile away. That's why he has those big eyes, so he can zoom in and find his food. His hearing is very sensitive. He can hear in stereo. His hearing, in combination with his eyesight, is what allows him to be able to find his prey. That is why they're referred to as the wise old owl. Many people think that owls are smart. They're not too smart. I don't want to say it too loud, but this guy's as dumb as a box of rocks. For real. They're really not smart, and the reason is because they don't have very big brains, and that's because those big eyes take up most of the room inside of their skull. So very important to them that their eyes are safe. They need both eyes to see, so they actually have an extra eyelid. So when they're little babies and are poking around at each other inside the nest, that extra eyelid will come down and will protect him. He needs that both eyes and his hearing to be able to locate his live food. That's what they'll eat in the wild. And in the wild, these guys have been seen taking down prey items as large as baby deer. That's how powerful those talons are, those big nails. And that is what makes this bird a raptor, also known as a bird of prey. Animals that are raptors, or birds that are raptors, are birds that will hunt utilizing their talons for their hunting tools. And that would consist of owls, eagles, hawks, and falcons. All 4 of the species of raptors I just named are federally protected, illegal to own unless you have special permits. And believe me, the government doesn't fool around. In fact, this bird here has bands, one on each leg. There's a sequence of numbers and a phone number on there. In addition to that, I have all my permits and paperwork with me at all times. If I'm ever stopped by the authorities, state or federal, they can run the numbers on those bands to prove this bird was legally captive bred and born, legally obtained right here in the United States. Again, we don't want to take animals from the wild. This animal here is protected in certain areas. He's not going anywhere. He's got a good grip on him. This animal is actually protected in certain areas of Europe where he is from. They have no predators except for one, human beings. People actually kill these beautiful animals for no reason. So they are protected in certain areas. The good news is there are a lot of breeders throughout the world breeding these beautiful animals. Now, many people believe that owls can turn their heads all the way around or 360 degrees. They cannot. They can only turn their heads about 270 degrees or 3/4 the way around. And that's because they have extra bones or extra vertebrae in their neck to give them a large turn radius to locate their prey. His eyes are fixed in their sockets. He can only see straight forward. He can't look left and right and up and down and around and around and all that fun stuff. So the extra bones in his neck give him the opportunity to be able to be very mobile so he can zone in and find his prey. His feathers, very soft. Unlike our parrots that we have, when they flap their wings, you can hear them 100 yards away. Well, the birds that we have don't eat live food. They eat nuts and seeds and berries. So they don't have to be silent. They can make all the noise they want. This guy here, being a bird of prey, sneaking up on live food, has to be silent. So he is designed to be aerodynamic. So when he flies, you will not hear him coming. And he will find his prey under several feet of snow, by the way, in the middle of the winter. These guys are excellent predators. And he'll swoop down, and he'll use his big talons to grab that prey. Usually these guys are going to look for small to medium-sized prey on them, maybe like squirrels or rabbits. But if he wanted to, he could grab a snake off the ground. He could catch a bird in mid-flight. He could catch a fish right out of the water. These guys are very, very skilled hunters. Very beautiful birds. They have no sense of smell. He can't smell anything. So if he wanted to scoop down and grab himself a skunk off the ground, stink for a couple weeks, but hey, he won't smell it, so it won't bother him, not even a little bit. Right, my friend? Now, we train our birds at Animal Junction to learn to fly to us on command. This guy here is a little slower than our other baby at home. We have a baby South American Spectacled Owl. Took us about 3 weeks to train him to fly to us on command. We've been working for this guy for about a year. He just doesn't get it. That's what I mean. They're not too smart. Beautiful animals, but not too smart. So we're going to put Oliver away, and we're going to move on to our next friend here. Okay, buddy. Relax. Yep. Get on. There you go. Here we go. Here we go. All right. Okay, now my next friend is my friend Honey. So I have to ask y'all to be very, very quiet because she is very shy. This little girl never comes out of her sleeping bag till the wee hours of the morning when we're all sleeping and it's nice and dark and quiet. So here is my friend Honey. Now, what I'll do is I'll put my hand in here for just a second or two. She can smell my scent. Most of my animals won't allow strangers to touch them. Oliver's a little bit different, but my mammals, they will not allow strangers. I bottle raise them all myself. They bond to me, and they don't like anyone else. So here is Honey, the honey bear, also known as a kinkajou. And in South America and Central America, where they're found, they're also called nightwalkers because they're out bebopping around all night long. Now, this little girl right here is a nocturnal animal, so she will spend all day sleeping and spend most of her time awake at nighttime. Again, nightwalkers. They're called honey bears because they love honey and because of the coloration on their bellies. And this is where they got the Winnie the Pooh character from, right here, this animal right here. So notice the honey color fur right there. Her tongue is 6 inches long. That is so she can drink the honey out of the beehives. And many people ask, won't they get stung? She'll get stung. Her fur is very thick, very plush. It will protect her from the bee stings. Her long 6-inch tongue will also help her to eat her other favorite foods, which are nectar and pollen. Very big flowers in the jungle canopy down in South America. And she can use that tongue to lick the pollen and the honey out of those flowers. And she'll go from flower to flower, just like a bumblebee, just like a butterfly. Same thing. Very important part of the ecosystem. They help with pollination. They help with seed dispersal. Now, this little girl is not a member of the bear family. They're members of the raccoon family, classified as a carnivore, a meat eater. And she's got some pretty big canines, pretty big teeth on her. But they really don't eat a lot of live food. Occasionally, they'll eat some insects, sometimes will eat a very small mammal or a very small bird or lizard, but for the most part, they really love to eat leaves, tree bark, twigs, and fruits. Every single day, this girl gets 3 whole bananas, half an apple, fresh vegetables, a little bit of dog food, got to make sure they're getting a protein, and a gummy bear vitamin. All my buddies get vitamins every single day. I got to make sure they're getting all of their nutrients. Her fur is soft, and it's actually water-resistant. She spends a lot of time down there in a jungle canopy in the Amazon. It rains almost every day. So when we bathe her, she's dry within 3 or 4 minutes, as opposed to some of our other animals that come from the desert. It takes them hours to dry off. Now, they're designed to live in the trees, and that's because in South America, there's a lot of predators. Anacondas, boa constrictors, crocodiles and caimans, jungle cats. These cute and cuddly little creatures cannot defend themselves against those big predators. So they're designed to be arboreal or tree-dwelling. Strong arms, strong legs, and a really strong prehensile tail. Nope, you got to let go there. There you go. All right. And this tail acts as an extra limb, an extra arm, or an extra leg for her to get around up in the jungle canopy. Now, some of you might notice a bald spot right smack center in the middle of her neck right there. That's her scent gland. Many animals are territorial. Many animals will mark their territory. And that's what this little girl do. She'll pick her tree, she'll climb up, and she'll mark the different tree branches with this bald spot right here. She'll put her scent throughout that tree to let other honey bears know, hey, this is my tree, pal. Go find your own. Beautiful animal. Okay, now we're going to move on to our special guests here. These are my friends, Rachel, that's mommy sloth, and Sid, and that's the baby sloth. And these are Tutu. I hear somebody laughing. You know why. You know why I named them that, right? What movie was that from? There we go. Now, the baby is still on mommy, and she leaves, ventures off only at nighttime. And the reason we purchased them together is because there's some research that suggests that these animals could actually die from separation anxiety. So I'd rather be safe than sorry and take the chance of the approximate age on the baby, because they can leave their mommies anywhere from 6 months to a year old. So I said to the breeder, I said, you know what, I'll take mom and I'll take baby. So baby's coming up on about a year old, ventures off at night, but still hangs on mommy all day long. Now, there's 5 different species of sloths, and they're all from Central and South America. You have 2-toed sloths, and you have 3-toed sloths. These are 2-toed sloths. The one you see in the picture here is a 3-toed sloth. And the difference is, you look at their front toes. So if they have 2 toes in the front, you know it's a 2-toed. If there's 3, it's a 3-toed. And basically the difference is, besides size, weight, and their physical characteristics, another big difference is their diet. Now, my friends right here, I'm going to try to get them mobile for you in just a few minutes. These guys will eat lots of fruits and vegetables. They'll eat tree leaves and flowers and things like that in South America. The 3-toed sloth will only eat a particular leaf from a particular tree. And that's why there's not as many 3-toed sloths in captivity, because they're very difficult to keep alive as opposed to the 2-toed sloth. And don't think the 2-toed, just because they have a diet that's easy to accommodate, are animals that are easy to keep alive. Every single animal that we have, we must duplicate its natural environment. If it comes from the desert, then it's going to be warm and it's going to be low humidity. These guys are from the Amazon, where it's very high humidity and high temperatures. We have to duplicate that for them. So they have a very large enclosure, plexiglass, mulch on the bottom. They get sprayed down, humidifiers next to the cage. Got to make sure they have the appropriate humidity. Some animals are very sensitive to that. If they don't have the proper temperatures, the proper humidity, they will die. So that's very important. We have hygrometers, instrument used to measure humidity, and we have thermometers to check their temperatures. We have this really cool piece of equipment right here that's really, really beneficial to us. This is a laser thermometer. We can check the temperature of any animal, any cage, any baby, any egg, in any incubator at any time without disturbing them. So I can, right there, 81 degrees. Well, that's a good temperature. Now, I'll hit the cage here, 75 degrees. That's the temperature in the room right now, about 75. A little cool, but it's not going to bother mom for a couple hours, because the temperatures do drop a little bit at night down in the Amazon. Now, let me see if I can get her to move around just a little bit here so you can get a better look of her. Now, even though these animals are long-term captives, they will bite and they will scratch. With some animals, that's just the way it is. No matter how much you work with them, sometimes they just won't tame down. I know, Mom. Here we go. Try to move around a little bit. I want you guys to be able to see the baby on mom's belly here. And mom's very, very protective of her baby. I can tell you that. These animals are very, very protective. There we go. Look how long her arms are. They are very, very long. When we got her, we opened up the box. The arm just kept coming out and coming out and coming out. I thought we had an orangutan thing. What is that coming out of the box? Mom's probably about 5 years old. She's full grown. Two-toed sloths will weigh in somewhere between 10 and 20 pounds. The baby there was just a little tiny thing when we got mom and baby. He weighed probably somewhere around a pound or so. His fur is really, really soft as opposed to mom's fur, which is very thick and very coarse. And the fur is designed like that for a reason. One, it actually goes from the belly out, and that's because it rains all the time, and these animals spend their entire lives upside down. So to make the fur water resistant, if you want to call it that, or rainwater to wash off of her fur, that's why her fur is pointed from her belly to her back. They will spend their entire lives within one, two, at most four trees. These guys are the slowest mammal in the entire world. They're extremely slow. They'll spend their whole lives upside down. They'll do everything. Do their eating upside down, breeding. Everything is upside down except for one thing, when they go potty. Now, these guys can actually go potty only once a week, and there's a reason for that, believe it or not. You're thinking, where's he going with this one? Well, down in South America, in the rainy season, they'll go potty in the middle of the afternoon, and they'll stay up in the tree because the rainwater is going to wash away the potty. See, animals on the ground are going to be looking for that smell. So if they go potty and there's no rain to wash that away, well, guess what? The predators on the ground, the big jungle cats, the ocelots, and the big harpy eagles, animals are going to be looking. There's a lot of predators down there, believe it or not. They are pretty good-sized mammals, but there's predators out there that can easily eat them, easily make them lunch. So they're very smart. They move extremely slow, and they move very infrequently. What they'll do is they'll just hang around up there. They'll do most of their eating, maybe at dawn, maybe at dusk, because birds of prey can only see well during the middle of the daytime when it's very bright outside. And there's a very large bird of prey in South America called the harpy eagle. Big bird of prey, bigger than an owl, much bigger than an owl. And they easily have huge talons, and they can grab a mother sloth just like that right off the perch. So these guys will do very, very minimal movement. Now, what they'll do in the dry season is they will actually descend all the way down to the bottom of the floor, the rainforest floor, and they'll actually make a little hole, and they'll go potty, and then they'll go back up to the top of the tree. And that's because they don't want predators to pick up their scent, to know what tree that these animals are in. Now, in the rainy season, they actually form a very unique algae that is nowhere else in the world. And this algae serves two purposes. One, camouflage. That green algae will help this animal blend in with this environment. So they're so slow, and with the camouflage and the way they also curl up and the way they hang, they kind of look like just a bushel of leaves up there in the tree. So most predators do not see them. Another thing, these guys have very poor hearing, and scientists believe that they have poor hearing because if there's a loud, sudden noise in the rainforest, well, it's going to startle most animals. These guys, they won't be startled. Therefore, the predators that are in the area are not going to pick up on that. So that's a good thing. These guys really don't need very good hearing. The one thing they do need is an excellent sense of smell to find their food. And they have a very good sense of smell, looking for their food that they're looking for, which is they're herbivores. So they're looking for fruits and vegetation and things like that. In captivity, these guys right here make a leaf eater biscuit designed just for this type of animal, for sloths. So it's a zoological diet that they get, which has lots of nutrients in it, but they get bananas, they get sweet potatoes, zucchinis, pickles, cucumbers, apples, and the list goes on and on and on. And we put special vitamins on top of their food. Sometimes we give them a thing called probiotics, so we got to make sure these animals are getting all of their nutrients. So, again, humidity, temperature, and diet, very, very important for all the animals you see here today, not just for these guys. But these guys, of all the animals we have at Animal Junction, we have well over 100 animals, are probably the most delicate animals to maintain. Very, very, very delicate animals. Well, I think that's pretty much it. One last thing, as far as the gestation period for them is about 6 to 12 months. They'll have a little baby, which is born about I think, about 12 ounces. Again, that baby will stay on mommy for probably about 6 months, maybe 9 months, and they start venturing off about 9 months to 12 months. So at nighttime, when the lights go out in our facility, our little baby friend here wanders off, so we actually have two very large food bowls in there now, so they can go down and they hang upside down, they grab their food, they eat, they do everything upside down all night long. That's what they do, just hanging around. And we'll hang out and we'll watch these guys for hours. Just really, really unique animals to watch. We have most of our animals are nocturnal. Next to their cages are Egyptian fruit bat cage. A group of unique animals. We have a colony of about 12 fruit bats from Egypt. Beautiful animals. So we have red lights on the cages. So at nighttime, we can sit in a facility and watch these beautiful animals in their natural behavior, natural environment. What we're going to do now is we're going to answer some questions from anybody in the audience here who might have some particular questions about the owl, the honey bear, the sloths, or any animals in general. I think somebody back here had a question. How long do sloths live? In the wild, sloths live about 10 to 12 years. In captivity, they live up to 30 years. Most animals that are captive bred and born in captivity will live longer than their counterparts in the wild because of several reasons. One, predation. They're not exposed to predators. And two, they don't have the stress factor or disease factor. So in captivity, if these animals are maintained right, proper temperature, humidity, and diet, they'll live 30 plus years. So we actually are waiting for several more sloths to come to set up a breeding facility, a breeding colony of these animals. That's our goal with all the animals that we have. Yes? Our anaconda is 30 feet long. Very good. Anacondas can reach lengths of about 27 feet, so you're really close. The longest snake in the world is about 33 and a half feet, which is the reticulated python. We have one at our facility which is 18 feet long. But the anaconda is the largest snake in the world, and that's because they get really wide, they get really heavy. These animals spend a lot of time in the water, and one of their favorite foods are capybara, which is the largest rodent in the world, so they're very, very big. So they're very big, wide, heavy-bodied snakes that can easily constrict and kill a capybara or a crocodile or caiman, which get to be about 6 to 8 feet, and they're very powerful predators. So yes, very, very good question. Big snakes, heavy snakes, and we have a 5-footer back at the facility. Believe it or not, it's friendly, because in general, anacondas can be very, very nasty. Yes? Why do sloths move so slow? Great question. Sloths, being the slowest mammal in the world, have very slow digestive systems, so they eat slow. It takes them almost a month to digest their food. And the reason for that is because they need to be slow to protect themselves, so they can't move really fast. The faster they move, the more energy they're going to expel, and they can't afford to do that. Sloths in size, in comparison to size of other mammals, are approximately half the weight of mammals their size and half the muscle mass of animals their size. It would take a sloth over 4 hours to walk 1 mile. That's how slow they are. But again, they have to be slow. Everything about them is slow, so they don't expend too much energy. Even their temperature is different than other mammals. Their temperature is the lowest of all mammals. It's approximately 93 degrees, and it can fluctuate as much as 10 degrees, kind of like a cold-blooded animal. And the reason for that is because the cooler they are, the less energy that they expend. The less energy they expend, the less they have to eat. The less they have to eat, the less they have to move to protect themselves from predators. They don't want to be moving around a lot. They want to be stationary so they don't get fall prey to other bigger animals. Yes? There's 5 species of sloths altogether. There's 2-toed sloths, which is the Linnaeus sloth and the Hoffman sloth. And then there's 3 different species of the 3-toed sloth. I'm not exactly sure of the names. I don't remember names. We know a lot about them as far as general information, but as far as specific information, we know we're never going to own any because of their very delicate diet. It would be a bit like having a koala, which only lives on eucalyptus leaves. So if we can't supply a diet for them all year round, then we just would have no interest in obtaining that species of animal. Yes? No, actually, these animals are very powerful, believe it or not. So no, it's not difficult for her. As the baby gets bigger, though, there'll be some point where she'll say, okay, enough's enough, you're on your own here. But at this point in time, no, not a problem, not even a little bit. Mm-mm. They, for their size, they really don't weigh as much as they appear to weigh. They look much heavier than they really are, and that's again because they don't have a lot of muscle mass to them. They can't afford to be heavy. These guys are going to be way up in the jungle canopy in the thinner branches, not the thicker branches, because in the thinner branches, the heavy predators are not going to be able to get up there and attack these guys. So that's where we're going to spend most of their time. Anybody else? All the way in the back there? Hello. Great question. Yes, they are. They are. Several of the different species of sloths are endangered. They are protected because of deforestation. They're knocking down every day. Listen to this. Every single day, tens of thousands of acres of rainforest are being destroyed in South America. Tens of thousands. So a lot of my friends you see here and a lot we have back at our facility are either threatened or protected or endangered or protected in some way because of that. And they're knocking down these forests for agricultural reasons, farming reasons, logging reasons, all these different reasons. And that's where we need to step in and we need to help with that. Things we can do, you can join the Philadelphia Zoo, adopt an animal program. You can join the National Wildlife Fund. It's a conservation program where all that money that we donate to these organizations gives them the ability to deal with the government and legislature and go down to South America and say, hey, stop. You got to stop doing this to the rainforest because guess what? When it's gone, it's gone. These animals aren't going to be around anymore. The good news is there are a lot of breeding facilities and zoos in our country and around the world, but it's not a good thing if these animals are extinct in their natural habitat. That's not a good thing that we're taking away their habitat. That's not fair, not even a little bit. In the last 30 years, we've almost destroyed the Everglades. We have done so much damage to the Everglades. It's really sad. Finally, the government says, okay, you know what? We're going to stop building. We're going to stop destroying. Now we're going to turn the tables around. Now we're going to try to make the Everglades back, bring it back to what it was. However, we keep bringing all these animals in from other countries, and people let animals like Burmese pythons and monitor lizards and iguanas, they keep letting these animals go in the Everglades, and these animals are eating all the other animals, and they're totally continuing to disrupt the entire ecosystem. So it's not a good thing when people let animals go into the wild here in our country, which is a big problem, by the way. Yes? How long is a boa constrictor? Boas are probably in the top 10 largest snakes. They're probably going to be somewhere, I would say 10 to 12 feet would be their maximum length. And the females in your boas and pythons get much larger than the males do. Yes?
Can you tell when a sloth is happy?
Can you tell when they're happy? Not really. They don't have any types of facial expressions or anything like that. Now, at nighttime, I do have a little bit of a bond with them. I can go down at a certain time of the night. And I have the red lights on so I can see them and they can see me. And I'll go in and I'll hand feed them. And, you know, but that's the extent of it. I can pet them. But as far as handling them and taking me out of the cage, just really can't do that with these animals here. Yes?
How long can that honey bear
tail stretch? Her tail is probably about a foot and a half long, maybe a little bit longer, and very, very powerful. Yes?
What kind of sloth?
This is the Linnae, L-I-N-N-A, Linnae's two-toed sloth. Yes?
How do they get their food when they're hanging upside down?
Using their noses. What they'll do is they'll usually hunt during dusk or dawn, and they'll use their keen sense of smell as they ascend or descend up and down that tree. And they'll spend a lot of time, like I said, usually within just a few trees, looking for their food, looking for leaves and twigs and buds and fruits and things like that. Yes?
How long does a honey bear
live? In captivity, the record for honey bears was in the 30s. I think it was 39 years at the Honolulu Zoo, I'm pretty sure. But I know it was in the 30s. Anyone else? Yes? Where's the dad? No, they don't. No, they live very solitary lives, and once baby leaves mom, they're all off on their own. Yep. No, there's absolutely no family structure at all. No. But as far as the family, what family they're from the Xenotheran family, which makes up of sloths, anteaters, and armadillos, all very, very unique, very bizarre type animals, and they're all closely related together. Yes? How long does a sloth live? The sloths in captivity will live to be probably about 30 years old, maybe even a little bit longer. We hope to live longer than that because we know a lot more about these animals today than we did 10, 20, 30 years ago. A lot more research, a lot more commercial diets with specific needs, specific supplements and other things mixed into these diets for these animals. So they should live longer than 30 years. Yes? Is a two-toed sloth longer than a three-toed sloth? That's a great question. Actually, the three-toed sloths tend to be a little bit larger than the two-toed sloth. Good question. Anybody else? Yes. Okay, if you remember, just ask me later. Yes. Why do they hunt in the night? So they can protect themselves from predators. A lot of animals will move around at nighttime because other animals are diurnal or daytime animals, so they can't see them moving around. So if they move real slow during the darkness hours, that protects them from predators. So nobody makes a meal out of them for lunch. Yes?
Do you have a favorite kind of leaf or fruit?
A favorite kind of leaf or fruit? Well, in captivity, I can tell you these guys love sweet potatoes. They absolutely love them. Yes? Why did the owl
see really far?
Why does the owl see really far? So he can find his food item from far, far away. They have real big eyes, and their pupils get real big at night, so he can find his food item, and he can grab it at nighttime. Yes? The owl gets a medium-sized rat every single day of the year. We have a freezer. Everybody says, oh, gross. We have a freezer full of frozen rodents of all sizes. And I tell you that because we don't take any animals from the wild, remember? Animals in the wild can carry diseases, so we would never take a rodent from the wild and feed it to our animals. There's zoological supply companies out there that breed these animals by the thousands and tens of thousands. They package them up in freezer packs and everything. They come labeled, marked, so we know that these animals are packed with protein and nutrients to feed our animals. And that's very, very important. I won't walk into a pet store and buy a rodent to feed my animals. I don't know where that animal came from, if it has diseases, and if it's even been fed within the last several days. So if there's no nutrients in the animal, then my animals aren't getting nutrients. Yes?
Why are
they considered wise old smart owls? Because of their excellent hunting capabilities, which is the combination of their eyesight and their hearing. That together allows them to find prey from a very far distance and prey in very, very dim light. Yes? Are they attack predators? Absolutely not. No. These animals are not going to be doing much moving around. They're going to be very stationary. However, if you disturb them, if you go after them, if you poke around, let me tell you, they deliver a very nasty bite, and they can hurt you really bad. They can do a lot of damage with their claws, a lot of damage. I got bit by Junior Sloth, the little baby. He got me one day. He was mad. We were at picture taking a while back, and he got me on the finger. I figured, slowest mammal in the world. He ain't going to get me. He got me, and let me tell you, they hurt really bad. Very, very powerful jaws. Yes? How long does the owl live? In captivity, European eagle owls will live up to 40 years. In the wild, they live probably about 15 years. Yes? The European eagle owl is the largest owl in the world. Now, our country, it's the great horned owl. His cousin. Yes? A king cobra can get up to 18 feet long. Okay, folks, that concludes our presentation for today. I really appreciate you guys for having us here. If you get a chance, visit our website, animaljunction.com. Thank you very much.